FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello everybody. Welcome along to the FWA podcast. The winter break is out of the way. We had a couple of weeks off and we're back just after the FA Cup weekend. Looking forward to the Premier League as well. Every week we get one of the FWA members, the Football Writers Association. And this week is no different. We've got one of the National Committee members on to talk to us. John Lay, formerly of the Telegraph Media Group. Your Twitter address, John, we'll probably give it away to people what your key skill is. Your Twitter address is at StatmanJohn.
It is, Lee. Yes, nice to speak to you.
And you?
It's been a long time, and as it says, stats are my one real love in football.
Yeah. Well, we've got a mutual love. I'm just an amateur compared to you. We'll come on to John's stats in a little while. I'm fascinated to ask him a few questions about them. First of all, just looking back on the FA Cup, it was a strange one, John. I mean, you've seen a fair few FA Cups over the years, as we all have. This is another weird one. 5 days. I mean, we all want a 5-day weekend, obviously, but by the time we got to the Everton West Ham game, it seemed strange, didn't it?
Well, it was 98 and a half hours between the kickoff from the first game to the end of play at Everton when Lukaku stole that equaliser at Goodison Park against West Ham, and that's too long, isn't it? The interesting thing, I just think that the FA have lost their way marketing this. I know they're guided, their hands are tied by television commitments, but I give you an example of how I think other sports have got it right. The Big Bash, which I've been watching every morning, absolutely loved it. Now I know that's gone over, that goes over a 6-week period, but it's marketed so well. You know what you're going to get. And similarly, the World Darts Championships at Ali Pali, I'm lucky enough to go there, sponsored by William Hill, of course, and just the way that was marketed as well. And then you go to football, which is meant to be, with respect to the other two sports, the superior, more popular sport. And everyone lost interest. And it wasn't just the punters. Look at the crowds as well. The crowds were terrible. They closed one of the stands at Turf Moor when Tottenham visited Burnley on the Monday night. Everton's crowd was just 22,000 against West Ham. And all the way across, obviously, the likes of Blyth and AFC Wimbledon got big crowds, so that's understandable. But the rest just weren't interested. And what I found interesting, although the crowds weren't that big and the punters weren't interested, the teams that were being put out were pretty strong. So the teams are taking it seriously because they know there's a very good chance of silverware and booking a place in Europe. But overall, a damp squib and one of the poorest FA Cups I can remember, certainly for shocks. I think possibly the biggest shock was Preston beating Norwich or Rochdale winning, but there, you know, there weren't too many around.
No, that
was a big disappointment for me.
Yeah, Sheffield United beating QPR, but then again, you know, you look at QPR's record in the competition, it's not that big a shock. I mean, the odds beforehand, I think Sheffield United were maybe like 9-2, which for, you know, a League One team playing a Premier League opposition who've been so good at home, it was almost like the bookmakers were saying this won't even be a shock. One of the things that got me more than anything really was, and I don't know what it was all about, the likes of, you know, I think the West Brom performance, I don't know if they were trying to not rub it in the faces, you know, they were beating Gateshead so easily, but the fact that Seydou Berahino scored 4 goals and didn't celebrate one of them, and in fact looked like it, I don't know, looked like he'd, you know, I don't know what he looked like. He looked like he didn't want to be there.
Well, I got that as a straight message that he's leaving, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, normally when you don't celebrate, it's against your former team. Now, I've looked through the record book. I can't see any Berahino ever putting on the Gateshead shirt. So I don't think that's the excuse. I don't know. It was a weird one, I agree.
Yeah, it's strange.
It was a weird week. And that does suggest to me, I don't know what the odds are on him leaving, but that does suggest to me that he could well be on his way out, and there'll be plenty of takers.
Yeah, because his teammates were certainly celebrating when they scored. Maybe they're just less used to scoring. And the odds for the FA Cup, as we look forward to the replays, which are next midweek, Chelsea and Manchester City are joint favourites at 9-2, more or less inseparable at the moment, aren't they? Manchester United 5-1, Arsenal 7-1, Liverpool 9-1, Tottenham then big jump up to 14-1. And then you've got Everton and West Ham at 20-1. Southampton at 25s with Swansea. Stoke at 28-1. And then Sunderland, West Brom at 40-1, 50-1, and bigger the rest of them. There's usually a big team in the final, even if they're playing a so-called smaller team. Who do you think is going to pay this the most attention, do you think, John?
Well, I think if there was a one in the year, I'd say Tottenham, because they always seem to win the cup with a one in the year. But I think they look a good cup side this season. They're in the semi-finals of the Capital One Cup. Would fancy themselves against Sheffield United, who you've just mentioned, even though they've got a great cup pedigree. But they will fancy themselves certainly getting to the final of the Old League Cup, and I fancy they could have a run there. If West Ham can get over Everton at home, I think they should. I always fancy them every year as a decent cup side, but you know, they've had a bit of a rough old time in the FA Cup. They've not been there since 2006 with that Gerrard-inspired penalty shootout against Liverpool in the Millennium Stadium, and they might be due a run. As an Arsenal fan, I'd love to go back again. I had a really wonderful afternoon out, albeit with some palpitations last year, and they've always got a chance, or a good cup side. But then you've got to look at the Chelseas, the Manchester Cities and the Manchester Uniteds. Difficult to split them at all, really, but Louis van Gaal has said he's going to take the FA Cup seriously, which is good. They all should. And if he is, and if he gets some players back and signs some more players, then you've got to look at United as a good bet. So, you know, we're only up to the fourth round. As you say, we've still got some replays to come yet. So it's early days, unless you really want your sticky neck out. But I like the odds on Tottenham. I think, albeit being a gooner, I think the odds on Tottenham are pretty good, and I wouldn't mind having a little bet on them.
And to be fair, throughout this whole decade, John, there will be a one in the year anyway, so it would still kind of fit. I know what you're saying.
That's cheating a bit.
You're right about, and the other thing about Van Gaal as well, he's come out and said he wants to win it, and I think I'm right in saying that every country he's managed in, he's won a cup before he's gone on to win a league. So
that's
he's
that's the stat you've got above me. That's interesting. Well,
I'm hoping it's right now, John.
I'll make sure I'll find out.
I don't want to tweet from you saying it was wrong.
But no, that tells you everything about his philosophy, his plans, as he likes to call them, the projects. These foreigners are not calling it projects, don't they? We used to call them seasons; they call them projects.
Indeed. Let's talk about stats. I'm a huge fan of stats, much to the annoyance of some of the people here I work with. I tend to rather, you know, use stats to formulate a bet than using kind of gut instinct or anything like that, because I think, you know, obviously with betting, more often than not, if you use a statistical approach, you know, the maths should work eventually. What got you into it? You've been doing this for a long time, John. What first got you into keeping stats?
Well, I started work many, many years ago, back in the late 70s, at Hayter Sports Agency, which is still going.
Yeah.
He's about to celebrate its 60th anniversary. And I worked alongside a great man called Albert Sewell, who, along with doing all the stats for Haters, went on to Match of the Day every Saturday and supplied Des Lynam, who was then fronting the show, with all the stats. And Des Lynam used to refer to him as Uncle Albert.
Yeah, I remember that, actually.
Older listeners will remember that. And Albert Sewell taught me the best way to do it, and I've maintained my record books ever since, and I've got a pretty thorough library. Obviously, in this day and age of the fact that you've got Opta with their huge resources, I've been left behind a little bit. But I like my own interpretation of the stats. That's the important thing. Not so much the percentage of passing, but, you know, the teams that tend to win away from home more, and tend to use players away from home more, and all that type of thing. And I use those, and I've won money using that. I'm not a great betting man all the time, because I don't have the time, but when I do, I've sat down and I've had one or two accumulators, and I've won one or two other things. So it has proved right, and perhaps when I do retire, I'll concentrate on it a bit more, and I might be able to use your boys to help.
Have your stats changed much as the kind of the Optas of this world have come on board, and, you know, the WhoScored.com, so I mean, the detail is phenomenal, isn't it?
And sometimes it's too much.
Yes.
You know, there are, what's it, lies, damn lies, and statistics, and sometimes that's true. But I preview all the games. I used to do it for the Telegraph, and I now do it for a company abroad. And so I'm the League Managers Association's official statistician, the historian, so I do a lot of work with them as well. So I find that they are invaluable and people do like them. I've been tweeting something called Punter's Pointer. Aimed mainly at people that like a bet, for the last 5 or 6 years now. And that goes down well. I've got over 13,000 followers on Twitter, and now on Kicker.com, which I'm working for, which is a social media website. And I do seem to attract people that like a bet, and most of the bookmakers follow me as well, so I must be doing something right.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at that stat. I won't ruin it. The end of the Newcastle Chelsea game. Yeah. Should we look forward to the Premier League weekend and have a look at the TV games? You never know, John might have a few stats to throw at us for this week as well. 4 TV games to look forward to, and the rest, of course, as well. It all kicks off with Sunderland versus Liverpool on Saturday at 12:45. John, yeah. Sunderland 3-1, 5-2 the draw, and Liverpool. 10-11, the stats that you may have, and the thing that glares out at you from Sunderland's home form is the one win and the lack of goals.
Lack of goals, and also overall the number of draws. And given that Liverpool's away record isn't that good, I would say I'd like to know what a goalless draw is, Lee, because that strikes me as a potential for a draw.
It's 10-1.
7-1.
No, 10. 10-1.
10-1.
Yeah, and I think it'd be the first draw Liverpool have had away from home this season,
really?
if it happens.
Yeah, but they're not that good on the road.
10-1, yeah.
Sunderland haven't beaten Liverpool since March 2012, and that was at the Stadium of Light, and then since then they've lost 3 and drawn 2. And including last December's goalless draw at Anfield. So there you go. If you want a pointer, I think goalless draws wouldn't be a half bad bet.
Yeah, and the other way, if you're a bit more of a weakling like me and you don't want to go for the 0-0, you can always bet the unders on the goals, of course, these days. So under 2.5 goals is 10-11. Under 1.5 goals, so you get the 0-0 and you get a 1-0 either way as well. That's 11-4. So
yeah, that's not a bad
bet. Not bad. The tea time game on Saturday sees Crystal Palace take on Tottenham. 13-5 Palace, their first Premier League game under the new manager. 23-10 the draw, and 11-10 for Tottenham, who are fresh off a draw in the cup, but that 5-3 win over Chelsea last time out. I think they've won 4 of the last 5 away from home, Tottenham, all 2-1. They lost to Chelsea 3-0, but they've won 4 of the last 5, 2-1. It's amazing how often these things happen in betting where you think it can't happen again, and then you look at the result, it's 2-1 again. Something about the scoreline they just love at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Palace are still enjoying their 3-1 win over Liverpool, but that was late in November. And then since then, and that was only one of two home wins this season, they've lost 5 times at Selhurst and only drawn 2. So you've got Spurs, they're 5th. All right, they drew 1-1 on Tuesday night, sort of took their foot off the ball for just a few seconds. And as you say, you know, they're coming off that wonderful win over Chelsea. And I think they're unbeaten in the last 6 in the league. So, you know, you've got to put your neck on Spurs, really, I think. You know, Palace have gone 8 league games without a win now. So, yes, they'll be buoyed by the arrival of Pardew, and who's a favourite son down there, isn't he? They'll love him, and they'll love the fact that he's walked out on Newcastle, effectively, to come to Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big boost. Great atmosphere, great crowd. They've been terrific, their supporters, in the Premier League, and long may they still be there. Good club. Pretty well run, but obviously they can't hold on to manager. So hopefully Pardew's there for the long stay. He was the second longest serving manager in the Premier League when he walked out of Newcastle over 4 years, second only to Arsene Wenger, who's been there for about 400 years. So that's an impressive record, despite all his travail. So one wonders if he can see it out at Palace and turn them into a decent regular Premier League side.
The headline offers that William Hill put out there, it's usually a player to score and a team to win. The traders here have gone with Harry Kane to score and Tottenham to win at 3-1. Harry Kane scored in each of those 4 2-1s that I mentioned. Yeah. So he's obviously in good nick, isn't he?
He is. He's been a breath of fresh air, not only for Tottenham but for the Premier League and hopefully for England, because England are crying out for a player like him. And when the next squad's announced, I don't think they play again till March in the Euro 2016 qualifiers. He's got to be in that squad. Roy Hodgson will know what he's all about, and if he can avoid injury. I mean, I know a lot of his goals have come in cup competitions, but he's now being played more regularly in the Premier League and is responding. And he's got something like 17, 18 goals this season, which is hugely impressive for a young kid. Local product as well, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, indeed. Sunday's games starts off with Arsenal versus Stoke at 1:30. As we've already heard, it's John's team. This 4-9 Arsenal, the draw 17-5, and Stoke are 6-1. Stoke have won three times on the road. They've won at City, they've won at Tottenham, and they've won at Goodison. But I had a look into those games, and they've all been narrow wins, one goal wins. And the men who scored those goals in those three games, Diouf and Boyan, neither of them available. I think Boyan's got a hamstring, and Diouf's gone away to the Africa Cup of Nations. Could be big misses for them, couldn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to that. Looking forward to that one. Obviously, Arsenal will be looking for revenge for the 3-2 defeat last month.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, Stoke, did you say 6-1? I want more than that. Look at their record. They haven't won at Arsenal, either at Highbury or the Emirates, since August 1981.
And they've actually got not a bad record. I think they've won 6 of the 14 head-to-heads while they've been in the Premier League this time.
Stoke. Stoke, they've lost it in 9 successive visits to the Arsenal.
Amazing, isn't it?
Including each of their 6 games in the Premier League. So, you know, you look at Arsenal, you mentioned the people who won't be playing for Stoke. Arsenal will have Olivier Giroud back after suspension, which will be a boost. Welbeck, I think, still injured, so they'll be looking for Giroud to return to scoring form. He's had a good season so far. The worrying thing for me as an Arsenal fan is that they've only got 33 points. They're down in, I think, 6th place. This stage last season, after 20 games, they had 12 points more and they were top. So it gives you an idea, you know, all that money spent over the summer and hopefully more to come this January. But it hasn't done a lot. In fact, it's had an adverse effect. And that's worrying if you're an Arsenal fan. And the reason why the jury's out on Arsene Wenger and why there's a move for him to finish as manager at the club maybe when the season finishes.
Would you go along with that?
I would.
Yeah.
I would. I think he goes down in history alongside Herbert Chapman.
Mm.
Maybe ahead of Herbert Chapman and George Graham, you know, the great managers of Arsenal Football Club. But there comes a time where, has he lost the dressing room? I don't know. Ultimately, it's down to the players. But if the players aren't playing for you, you've got to ask questions. And yeah, I've seen too many games this season where they've just not been at their game, and particularly against the bigger clubs. And there's no excuse, because Arsenal have got the players who can compete. Yes, they've had lots of injuries, and that's another problem that's got to be addressed. But I think I wouldn't get rid of him. If he's prepared to stay, I would keep him on and bring a younger man in. The problem is who? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer. Newcastle are discovering how difficult that is. So it's difficult. I know the feeling within the boardroom at Arsenal is very much the same as it was at Manchester United. You know, maybe we got rid of Fergie, went a year too early, and the reaction was to get the wrong man in, although at the time he seemed like the right man. No one was arguing. Everyone agreed that David Moyes was the man for the job, and it didn't work. He didn't have the players. Quite a lot of players had left, and he didn't really replace them, and they're suffering now as a consequence. So part of me thinks it's time for Wenger to step down, but the other part of me is worrying, what do you get? You know, the old adage, the better the devil you know, might apply here. So I'm not 100% certain, but I do think it's time for Arsenal to be looking for a new man.
The final TV game of the weekend is Manchester United versus Southampton at 4:00. Cracking game, this one. Third versus fourth.
Yeah.
Not many people would have thought that after the opening game of the season, when I think Southampton lost to Liverpool and Man United lost to Swansea. Since that Swansea defeat at Old Trafford, they've only dropped 2 points in the draw against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And they've been scoring goals. One thing they always did under Sir Alex Ferguson was score early in the first half, and they seem to be getting back into that groove under Van Gaal. I think you know, they've scored 22 at home. I think 13 of them have been in the first half, and Rooney's got most of them, I think.
That's right. Mind you, Southampton score goals, as you say, 34. The only worrying aspect of this for me is 24 have come at St Mary's, only 10 on the road. Well, United have only conceded 7 at home, and only Chelsea can boast a better home record in terms of conceding goals. So, you know, although Southampton, they got rid of that dodgy spell, didn't they? They went through a spell, they were losing, I don't know what it was, 3 or 4 or 5 games. But they're back to winning ways. They were very impressive against Arsenal, although Arsenal did press the self-destruct button. I think this has got the makings of a cracking game. I know Southampton have got one or two players away at the African Cup of Nations. But overall, you know, United, it's their best unbeaten run since last season, with 11 games without defeat. So they're going really strong. And the other pointer, Lee, I think for your punters to bear in mind is the fact that Southampton last won at Old Trafford 45 years ago in August 1969. Yeah. They won 4-1. Since then, they've been there 32 times, lost 25 and drawn 7. And in the 15 attempts they've had in the Premier League, people forget they were there a long time before they dropped out, they lost 13 and drawn 2. So United are still without the likes of Daley Blind, and looks like Luke Shaw and Rafael are going to be out as well. And Ashley Young and Valencia are also doubtful, so that's going to make a strain on an already depleted squad. But you still look at the players they do have, world beaters, good goalkeeper, etc., etc. And given the record and given the stats, I would say this is a United win waiting to happen.
Yeah, and 3-4 the price for them to win it. Wayne Rooney to score in a Man United win, which again wouldn't be a big surprise, is priced up at 3-1.
Yeah,
it looks decent, doesn't it? We ask the other matches, incidentally, just to run through them very quickly. Everton Man City, which is a cracker, at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Leicester Aston Villa, West Brom Hull, Burnley QPR, Chelsea Newcastle, another good game, and Swansea versus West Ham as well. Good games on 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, at Everton, they're at home, but they've got a poor record at home this season, and they're 13th. They've only got 21 points. They're 38 this time last season.
Amazing.
And you know, it just gives you an idea of where they've gone. They've got that draw in the week, which will give them a boost because they'll look at the FA Cup as a possible competition they can win. But City are going strong, and they know that any slip up by Chelsea, who are only above them on alphabetically, they can take advantage. So City will be up for this. They beat Everton 1-0 at the Etihad last season thanks to that Yaya Toure penalty. Not sure if he's available, whether he's gone to the Africa Cup of Nations, but obviously he's a key player for them. So this is a big one. They struggled a bit against Sheffield Wednesday, but they still won. And you know, you look at Everton, and they've got, I think McCarthy's struggling, there's a few others who are struggling injury-wise, and I know City are struggling to get goals, but then Milner scored a couple, didn't he, against Sheffield Wednesday, and Aguero can't be too far back, and Boney is looks like he's on his way there, Wilfred Boney from Swansea, so they'll be confident. They know this is an important juncture in the season now, just over halfway. Chelsea's Achilles heel has been nibbled at a little bit, and they'll fancy that they can go there and get the 3 points. So I would have thought a Man City win is fairly slim odds.
Yeah, 17-20, so it's not the worst, not the worst bet. Well, Toure went on Monday. Yeah, I think he set off on Monday to the Africa Cup of Nations. Yeah, we ask each of your colleagues every week, John, for a bet of the week. One result that you think will come in for punters out there. Is there anything that really grabs your attention?
Are you looking for good odds or
anything? Anything, whether it's a cast iron winner or a life changer, we don't mind.
I would say that Arsenal to beat Stoke City simply because they'll want revenge. They got Giroud back, and Stoke's record at Arsenal is so poor. Mm. So I would go for it won't be great. It'll probably be a 1-0 winner from Santi Cazorla in the 88th minute. So 1-0 Arsenal.
Yeah, 1-0 Arsenal's 13-2. Yeah, Cazorla to score, by the way, is 13-8 as well. And you can pair all those up. You can have the actual score cast and all the rest of it. So have a look through all the various odds on the Arsenal Stoke match. It's all available on the football pages at williamhill.com. John, thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Look forward to the future.
You can check out John's Twitter account at StatmanJohn. You'll also find all the links to Kicker, as he was explaining earlier on, plus the punter pointers. I've been having a quick look at those as we've been chatting. You can download this podcast at williamhill.com/podcasts. It's also available at footballwriters.co.uk. You can go to audioboom.com and find all of William Hill's podcasts. And if you go to iTunes and search William Hill Football, subscribe and we'll deliver, not personally, but someone will deliver the podcast straight to your phone, your tablet, or your PC. Thanks very much for listening. And if you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.